the Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, joined by the one and only Paul Dottino.
Gobble, gobble.
John Schmelk. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody, and welcome to Giants.com. 201-939-4513. That's how you call us and talk some Giants football. Or go to hashtag Giants Chat. We will keep an eye on that as well. So as you drive around or, you know, look for some Black Friday deals, or you're browsing the internet looking for some Christmas shopping on the web. They said that last night broke a record for most online purchases on Thanksgiving evening. So they're saying the Black Friday numbers are going to be limited because of the amount of shopping done on Thanksgiving night. So that's a little nugget out there for you.
That's because the Steelers-Colts game probably bored a lot of people.
Well, unfortunately, Andrew Luck didn't play, so you had a situation where
Scott Tolzien.
Scott, you know, and the funny thing about Scott Tolzien, he actually made some really nice throws in that game.
Did.
He really did, and he didn't get help. He had a couple. He had a drop in the end zone for a touchdown in that game, and he did not get a lot of help from his teammates. Of course, T.Y. Hilton going out and not returning after the first half wasn't real helpful either. Anyway, let's start there, Paul. We had two big games, at least in relation to the Giants yesterday on Thanksgiving.
Yes.
And we'll start there because we've talked a lot about Giants-Browns already. And we'll get to that, of course, and take your calls at 201-939-4513. So let's start with the game that mattered most, the Cowboys and the Redskins.
Yeah.
I think the game went sort of like everybody thought it would. It was high scoring. It was up and down. If you're a big fan of punting, it was not the game for you. You did not get many of those. And really, to me, Paul, where this game was won or lost was in the first half, and the Redskins failed in the red zone trying to get the ball into the end zone. And with the way the Cowboys offense runs, they're just so darn efficient, and they don't make any mistakes in terms of turning the ball over. You have to convert in the red zone, and the Redskins were not able to do it early. They tried the onside kick. They missed a 55-yard field goal, there it goes.
Yeah, the onside kick just made no sense to me. There was still so much time left in the fourth quarter at the time. But then again, you know, I talk about this a lot with the Cowboys, and I mentioned it to you and Bob Hopper earlier today. It's almost like, you know, the game's shortened because you know the Cowboys can run out the final 4 or 5 minutes of a game clock anytime they want to.
Their fourth quarter offense this year has been off the charts good.
It's ridiculous. I mean, it's like, you know, bring in the closer, Ezekiel Elliott, and that's it. He locks the game down
Dak Prescott is playing his best football in the fourth quarter. It's funny, and usually it's not like this for rookies. For a rookie quarterback, they might come out of the gates fast in the game, then the other team adjusts to them, and then the rookie quarterback calms down. He's the one making adjustments to defenses, it seems like, and is getting better as the game goes along.
You know, I thought with about 2 minutes, maybe a minute 50 to go, he threw a second and long pass. It was a short receiver screen to Beasley.
Yes.
That got them the first down that ultimately wound up killing the rest of the clock. And, you know, it was unexpected to me. Obviously, the Redskins didn't expect it either because he had plenty of room to get the first down. But I was saying to myself, okay, the fact that Garrett put him in that spot and allowed him to throw that ball shows you how far he's come as a rookie.
And they ran that same play against the 49ers a few weeks prior for a similar first down at the end of the game. It's a high percentage pass. You want to keep the clock running. But yes,
Ezekiel Elliott.
Right. You're right.
Right?
You're right.
So that said a lot to me about Garrett looking at Dak Prescott and saying, you know what, man, I trust you with this, and I also trust you that if for some strange reason they've got the right call up there, you're going to get out of it.
I will say this, though, too. I think the balloon will burst, and this is why I'm going to try to give the Giant fans some hope here. We saw in the first half of the game, I know you were in and out, so you didn't see a lot of it, but there were some throws where he threw the ball behind wide receivers, and the wide receivers, like, knocked the ball down.
Okay.
But if the wide receivers don't play good defense on those plays, he has two or three picks. And I think we've seen over the course of this year where he's made some inaccurate throws early in games that could be interceptions, and he's been lucky that defensive players haven't been in the right place at the right time. So, you know, if you want to look at one real reason the Cowboys are where they are, Paul, they don't turn the ball over.
No.
I mean, Ezekiel Elliott, I think, is one or two fumbles, and Dak Prescott, I think, is two interceptions, right?
Yeah. So it's ridiculous.
That's why they're winning all these games. I mean, it's off the charts, but I do think, at least in terms of Prescott, I think maybe not this year, but eventually they're going to come because he's not the most accurate passer. He's really good. He made some unbelievable throws in the second half into small windows, but he's made some bad throws that could turn into picks if defenders are in the right place.
The scouting report on him was that throws probably more than 20 yards or so are going to be somewhat inaccurate, and that's where he's going to have problems in this league. There were some people who thought that, I don't want to use Chad Pennington as an example because he's got a feather of an arm, but in terms of Prescott's ability coming into the league, the thinking was the short game, he'd be fine. Okay? He could deal with the short game, even as a rookie. But if he had to start throwing the ball long, if teams were packing it in on him, he couldn't handle it. That was the thinking, that he would be erratic and wild, and he would start coughing it up, and he would fold under pressure. Look, what he has done, to my dismay, obviously, because, you know, I was very surprised by this.
I think everybody was, Paul. It's not just you.
He has sprinkled in some longer-range passes into his game without it hurting him.
Yeah.
And that's what has been really surprising about it. And then on top of that, Ezekiel Elliott, who I will say everybody said he was the best running back in the draft, and everybody said he very easily could go top 10. I mean, this is not a shock, but the fact that he's this good, this efficient, this much of a workhorse, I think, again, is beyond expectations.
And the level of his impact. And I think, you know, his impact, I think, is even larger than his numbers.
He's Mike Tyson-like in terms of his power and impact on this offense.
It really is. It's unbelievable. But so the Giants are going to have to keep winning to keep track with the Dallas Cowboys. Obviously, the division's still very much in reach. Only two games out if they beat the Cleveland Browns on Sunday, and they play the Cowboys, of course, in 2 weeks' time. The other game yesterday, Paul, Lions and the Vikings. And that game also went as I expected. If you like punts, that was the game for you. I hope you tuned in at 12:30 because there wasn't a lot of going up and down the field and scoring an offense in that game. But the Lions managed to squeak out a victory, and Darius Slay made an unbelievable play at the end of the game, leaving the outside wide receiver. And if Bradford sees that, it could be a touchdown. Game over. But he leaves the outside receiver, jumps the route on Kyle Rudolph, makes a great interception. And Matt Prater, who had another great game, he's an excellent kicker, ended up winning the game for the Detroit Lions. But a very defensive-oriented game. And I think that game against Detroit in a few weeks, Paul, is going to be a real, real tough one because they're a solid, solid football team.
Yeah, but they're a different team at home.
That's true, too.
And
absolutely,
especially defensively, they seem to be much quicker flying around to the ball when they're home as opposed to when they're on the road. Now, that game is going to be at MetLife Stadium. We don't know what the cold will be. We don't know what the wind will be. We don't know what the kind of conditions will be. But to me, the Lions are they're like sandpaper. They can annoy you. They can give you a really rough time. But, you know, they're not like a hammer, all right? A hammer will just put you out.
Right.
They're like sandpaper. I don't think they're
great. They'll wear you down.
Yes, they absolutely will. Absolutely they will. And they're abrasive.
Right.
And they give you a lot of problems. But you're right. You make an interesting point, though, about how that game went. It's now fait accompli. You know Detroit's going to be trailing in the fourth quarter. And you know that if they win, it'll be a come-from-behind win in the final couple of minutes.
And probably a Matt Prater kick.
Kind of like what the Giants have done.
Yeah, that's true.
You
know? And that game, look, that game's going to be close. It's just the way it is.
Which team wants to be behind in the fourth quarter in that game?
Exactly. By the way, folks, if you're watching us on Twitter, thank you very much. Go to Giants.com. You can watch the rest of the show there. As we begin to take your calls at 201-939-4513. All right, let's get to the phones, everybody. Might as well not waste any time on this relaxing Friday. Hope you're enjoying your days off. We're working, but hopefully just a half day today for us. Let's go to Abdul in Minneapolis. He is going to join us first. Abdul, good morning. How
hey
are
guys.
You?
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too, pal.
I have a couple of questions. First of all, can you guys walk me through the logic behind not being allowed to suit up all 53 men and having to have inactives during a game? I never understood that.
May I?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I have had this conversation with front office people and NFL people. It comes down to this. It is believed in the interest of fairness that even though everybody has a 53-man roster, that in a given week, any team could have two, three, four guys down, five, six, seven, eight, nine,
so
10 guys down.
So it mitigates the effect of injuries.
Bingo.
Interesting. That actually makes sense. I never thought of that.
That's the reason.
Huh.
In the interest of fairness, the league believes that if you say to every team across the board, you're going to have to put seven guys down, that evens the playing field so that on any given Sunday, one team will not have a distinct advantage by having more available bodies in the game. That's the reason why. You could disagree if you like, but that's the reason why.
Okay. Yeah, because towards the end of the season, people are injured. Makes sense. Okay, now to the Cowboys. They are living a really just – it's one of those seasons where everything's going right for them. You know what I mean? Like – It's frustrating because, you know, the Giants had the exact opposite last year. Like, everything went wrong for them.
Okay.
And, Abdul, in fairness, that happened to the Cowboys last year, too. They won half as many games as the Giants did. So this is almost all their luck coming back around for them the following year.
Totally. Because it's like, you know, who makes a coach call an onside kick right then when the defense is, you know, stopping? You know, it's just everything is falling right for them.
Yep.
But, you know, It's just the way it goes, and it's too bad I have Skip Bayless on my Twitter feed because it's just driving me crazy.
Wait, Abdul, hold on. You can solve that problem.
All you have to do is click unfollow.
Get rid of him.
It's just getting kind of crazy. And also, you know, you mentioned something about how Elliott, you know, is getting lucky on, you know, some of these passes.
No, Prescott.
I'm very curious to see how he does when he comes up to the Meadowlands or MetLife in December with the wind blowing, you know, because right now he's playing a lot of stadium games. He's playing a lot of, you know, I've yet seen him in any kind of a cold weather wind blowing game.
Abdul, he played in Pittsburgh last week.
Oh,
he's got you on that one.
He played in Pittsburgh. You don't get any worse than that.
It was not great. Weather was kind of tough.
Well,
in Pittsburgh.
I don't know, man, because I can't stand the Cowboys, and it's
understandable.
It's hurting. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I said understandable you can't stand the Cowboys.
You know, and it's just he's making these passes that at any other time would get picked off. They just kind of slip through people's hands and they get in there. But it is what it is. And second of all, I was wondering if maybe Marshall Newhouse is found a new position because it seems like he's playing a better guard than he did at right tackle. I've been really – it's too bad he hurt his knee last week because it seemed like he's kind of – you know, his play inside has been much better than he played outside.
I mean, honestly, I think Newhouse had some issues inside, too, last week that people probably didn't notice. Yeah. That being said, I think the fact he's even playing as well inside as he did outside, given his lack of experience there and his inability to have a lot of practice reps, I'll sign up for that, thank you very much. Yeah, I don't think you can give enough credit.
Go ahead.
No, finish up, Abdul. It's okay.
I think this is what the Giants signed up for. He's kind of a spot starter. You know, I think him playing, you know, a starter was a little too much for him, but I think this is his perfect role, you know, coming in for an injured player, you know, a spot starter in there. Because I think, you know, he has some talent, but I don't think it's kind of an 11-game starting talent.
But Abdul, that's why he was brought here. He wasn't brought here to be a starter.
Exactly,
he was brought here to be a backup.
Correct.
So this is perfect. You're absolutely right.
I will say this. You must understand that when a guard makes a mistake, even though there's a shorter distance between the guard and the quarterback, usually it doesn't show up as glaring as when a tackle makes a mistake, because when you see a guy lose a battle off on the edge, it just glares out at you like a big red light.
And, Paul, think of it this way, too. If you have your tackles isolated out on the defensive ends, which usually happens, you have three guys to block two defensive tackles. So you have the center there helping and chipping and stuff like that, depending on how they're lined up. So a lot of times the guard will have some help, too, and even a running back that's picking somebody up, you know, in the middle of that line.
Just for the record, I've credited, or should I say downgraded, Newhouse for two sacks to Jordan and Mossy in the New Orleans game, and I haven't nailed him for any sacks since. I've only got two.
Okay.
Just for the record, he's only given up two.
I hear you.
I've got Flowers giving up a team-high four, just so you know.
He missed a lot of games, though, too.
That is true.
Is there any update on Shane Vereen? Because I think he could be a great late-season addition to this offense. He's just coming with fresh legs.
As far as we understand it, he's not practicing yet.
He's working with the trainers, though.
He is working with the trainers.
That we know. So, and we saw him do sprints before the game warming up.
Well, his legs weren't hurt, so I'm not sure how much sprints are
telling
you. So,
he's conditioning.
That is true. I'm not sure what level of work he's doing in the weight room. Until we hear something from Ben McAdoo, which we have in Abdul, I think we'll have to wait and see.
Okay. Well, thank you, guys.
Hey, thank you, man.
Happy Thanksgiving, and go Giants.
Have a great holiday weekend. Appreciate the call. Gary in Virginia. He's up next. Gary, how are you?
Good. Good morning. How you guys doing?
Doing great, Gary. How are you, pal?
Good, good. I got a question and a comment. My question is, I've noticed the since the bye, the running game's kind of picked up or has significantly picked up. And the only difference that I've noticed, I mean, Pugh went out, but there's no way that makes it better. But you think it could be Jarrell Adams' play as a better blocking tight end? You think he's been the difference, or you think it's just the O-line just gelling together?
Well, I want you to understand there are a couple of factors that have helped this run game go in the right direction. Adams is one of them. I'm not gonna dispute that. They've also gone with the jumbo tight end package where you've seen some of the big tight end, which is the extra offensive lineman. That's been used on occasion. They've also run some running plays with the quarterback under center, which is different than running out of the shotgun. It also enhances the running game. You put those three things together, and I might add, John, you know, Craig Johnson, the running backs coach, said something to us 2 weeks ago when he was asked in the media scrum about Rashad Jennings. And he said, you know what, I got on him a little bit, and I prodded him. And he had a fire lit under him. This was against Cincinnati. He said, all week I noticed he was real prickly. And he said, you know what, as a coach sometimes, you got to poke a guy.
And I want to say this too. I want to throw one other thing into
the
equation.
He's running hard.
Quite frankly, their opponents haven't been great the last few weeks either. The Bengals have been gashed running the ball all year. The Eagles have not been great stopping the run. And you know what? I know people don't like, you know, giving credit to other teams when they do well, but you got to also give credit when they're not so good at certain things. And when you're, I think a lot of ways, and think of it this way. Over the last few years, when the Giants have had really good run defenses, has it really mattered what team has come in here to run the ball? Remember, what was it, 3-4 years ago when they had the streak of four or five straight, you know, running backs that averaged 120 yards per game and all of them got held under 70 yards?
Right.
If you have a good run defense, it's going to be hard to run against those groups. It doesn't matter who your running back is. So same deal. If you're facing a bad run defense, you're going to have more success. It's just the way the league goes. So I think that probably has something to do with it, too.
But there were some suspect rush defenses like, you know, New Orleans earlier in the year.
Absolutely.
Rams,
fair.
Packers.
Fair.
Giants didn't really run it down their throats.
No, that's fair, too. Absolutely. There has been a lot of improvement. And I think I like the idea of the running under center thing. Do you have a count, Paul? And I'm not sure if anybody keeps track of this, what the rushing average was in those jumbo tight end sets.
Might want to call your buddy Steve or Sam Monson.
Oh, over at Pro Football
Focus, they
right?
might have that.
Yeah, I will send them a direct message. I don't have it either.
That's not a stat that I have kept because, to be honest with you, up until the last month, that particular subject, when I do my film work and I keep my own sets of stats and stuff, I try to focus in on things that I think are going to be relevant. Up until the last month, the Giants' amount of running with a jumbo tight end has not been relevant. Running under center with the quarterback under center hasn't been relevant. And now all of a sudden it is because we're seeing some improvement with these formations. So now it's like I wish I had been keeping track of that all season long, because to go back now and review every single play, oh my goodness, I would need weeks to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I was going to say is you know, with the Cowboys, everybody's talking how good Prescott and Zeke Elliott is, but that O-line gives Prescott so much time that you could put most decent quarterbacks back there, and I feel like it would be the same result.
Well, hold on a second. You realize that same offensive line was there last year, and they won 3 games, right?
Yes, but they've had a year to get better, and they have more weapons than they did last year.
Dez Bryant's there, which is obviously a big difference, but the offensive line's pretty much the same. I mean, Doug Free's not getting any better at age 32. Tyron Smith's already a Pro Bowler. Zach Martin, Travis Frederick are always great. And look, their quarterbacks last year weren't average NFL quarterbacks. They were bad.
Far below.
They were bad NFL
Far below.
Quarterbacks. But you can't take too much credit away from a guy who has a rookie. And I'm just going to – I think he's second in the league in quarterback rating. And it's not like he's throwing for 150 yards a game here. I mean, if you look at his game log over the course of this year, his average yards per game – let me see if I can pull up his precise stats for you. And again, look, he gets a lot of help from the offensive line in the running game. There's no question about that. But in 11 games, he has 2,800 passing yards, which means he's averaging about 260, 270 passing yards per game. He has 18 touchdowns, which means he's on pace for about 27 or so. He's only thrown two interceptions, and he's averaging 8 yards per attempt. I mean, those are pretty darn good numbers for a rookie fourth-round pick.
He's doing what catcher Gary Sanchez did for the Yankees this
past
year.
No, he really is. Absolutely. That's a perfect comparison.
I mean, it is what it is. I mean, you can't degrade him. You just can't.
Yeah, that's right. I'd like to find out how much time he has on average time. Maybe Pro Football Focus would have that or something. But I feel like
up.
He just sits back there so long. It's almost like old school Tom Brady when you just put the ball behind his back. I mean, he's back there so long throwing it. But
you're absolutely right. He has been helped a ton by that offensive line, Gary. We have no debate or argument about that. But in the end, you still got to make the throws. You still got to make the plays.
You do.
You're right. All right, well, thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate the call. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the calls and say what's up to Steve up in West Point. Hey, Steve, are you a cadet? Are you a cadet up there?
No, I just live here. It was a good reference for you guys. I live in the town next to West Point. I'm not in West Point.
Ah, tremendous. No worries. What's up, Steve?
Nice area.
Oh, it's beautiful.
My wife teaches there, though.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Cool.
But so I just wanted to talk about this defense, guys. I'm so excited because we're healthy. We got the defensive line is playing outstanding. JPP is right back up to looking like his old form again. Vernon, Snacks, Harrison, great additions. Even got Hankins inside. I like the way Steve Spagnuolo is adapting again. I'm starting to see. Maybe because we're getting guys healthy and we have a full slate of players on the board, I'm starting to see some of his old tweaking of the defense as the game goes on. You see Vernon on the inside, you see a blitz coming from the corner, maybe Landon Collins blitzes. It's really exciting. I'm liking what I'm seeing because this time of year, defense, I really believe old school, the defense wins Super Bowls, you know? And it's good to see our defense clicking. And I was listening to Art Stapleton the other day, and he brought up a really good point. You know, in the beginning of the year, when all we were getting was pressures, people were saying, oh, well, you know, you're paying all this money just for pressures and it's not good, and people are ragging on them. I still hear people from now and then say stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he brought up a good point. He's like, if JPP and Vernon's pressures aren't good, then you can't really blame Flowers and Newhouse for the pressures they give on Eli.
You know, it's funny.
Pressures don't mean anything.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you make that point. I saw Art put that tweet out there as well. I thought he made a good point. Because a lot of Giant fans were downgrading the importance of pressures by the defensive line. But at the same time, those same fans were complaining how even though Eli Manning wasn't getting sacked, pressure was making him an ineffective quarterback. So you can't really have both those things at the same time. You know, you made a great point. I was going to bring that up a couple weeks ago when Art made the point, Steve, but you are 100% right on correct.
I think Art's probably many, many weeks late to that party because he should be watching BBKL. We've been talking about this for weeks, how pressures and quarterback hurries and quarterback hits are effective plays.
Right, but he made the comparison how the fans were contradicting themselves, how they were complaining how the Giants' offensive line was getting up pressures that affected Eli. They said, oh, I don't care about pressures by the Giants' defensive line. That affect the quarterback. So
I understand.
He brought that comparison up, which I thought was a great
one. He merged the two topics.
Yes, which is very smart
of him. And said
you
can't have both.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'll take that for sure. But you see, I've always believed, and I know the Giants coaches believe this, it's about a play that affects the quarterback. Now, if you watched the game the other day, yes, the Giants had 4 sacks in the fourth quarter. JPP had 2.5 himself, and that's great. You'll love to see that. But do you know what happened on the Landon Collins interception that actually sealed the game? Wasn't a sack. It was a quarterback pressure that forced him to throw the ball.
The hurry made him step up, which made him slip, which took a little juice off the ball, which turned into an interception.
It was a quarterback pressure. It was a hurry, which translated to a pick. What would you rather have, a sack or a pick?
Or go back 2 weeks ago when they forced Oh, shoot. Yeah. Who was it? I think it was Andy Dalton or it was Carson Wentz. They forced him to roll out early in the game, and that's when he airmailed the ball on the throw. That was just a pressure or a hurry, and it turned into an interception.
Look at all of these Giants defensive takeaways during this five-game winning streak, during this incredible defensive stand that you have seen, and I would challenge you to go back and look at all those takeaways. And I will swear it to you right now. Put me on a lie detector test. There is a quarterback hurry, pressure, hit, you name it, not a sack, that made that takeaway possible. It's a lock.
Definitely.
It's an absolute lock.
Definitely. Not only that, but you got key players that are locking down their positions that are allowing for those quarterback pressures too. Like, you got to give so much credit to Jenkins. I mean, he's balling every single week. The guy comes out and he's locking down the number one receiver.
He's been great.
Time in and time out,
Steve,
all season long. An acquisition.
Yeah, you brought it up at the start of your call, and I want to go back to it because I thought it was another excellent point. You talked about the defense and their health. And you want to go back to when the Giants were in the middle of that three-game losing streak. There was no Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie, or when he played, he was a shell of himself. Mm-hmm. And there was no Eli Apple. Since those guys have come back on the field and been healthy, the defense has looked completely different.
Don't forget they had just lost Darian Thompson, too.
And Darian Thompson wasn't playing as well. Now, Thompson's still out, but everyone else is back on the field now, and I think that's allowed Steve Spagnuolo to do the type of things you mentioned in your call. The blitzes, bringing Landon Collins, blitzing guys out of the slot, doing all that stuff. They're able to do it because the corners are healthy. They weren't able to do that stuff last year. Why? You're rolling out, you know, Trevin Wade and I'm honestly trying to think of the
Brandon
guys.
Brandon Merriweather?
Yeah, those guys on the back end of your secondary depth chart, and that's just not going to work.
Well, in Week 10 last year, I looked it up. We had 16 players either on IR or PUP.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's hard for any Coach Coughlin or Steve Spagnuolo, to put together. You know, I'm surprised we're even competitive at that point.
And I want to add one other thing to this. And, yes, the health factor is huge, John, and we should not at all underestimate the value of the health of this team. But there's one other thing here that look, you guys know I'm a huge Spags fan. I think he deserves a tremendous amount of credit between him and Bill McGovern, the linebackers coach, who have taken a meatloaf of linebackers, guys from all over the place.
Meatloaf.
Casillas, Robinson, Kelvin Shepard. They've taken a meatloaf group of linebackers, okay, and said, okay, let's see what we can do with these guys. And they have identified their strengths. They use them in roles and situations that allow them to be effective. Shepard is an early down, run down backer. He comes off the field. Keenan Robinson comes in. He seems to be really good in pass coverage, so they make sure they get him in there in the sub package. Casillas has been playing lights out, so he gets on the field for all plays. This mix and matching of the linebackers is not something you really want to do. You want to have guys who are three-down backers. But outside of Casillas, the Giants don't have a three-down backer. Devon Kennard, they've been using him, John, some on the D-line the last couple of weeks. He's been playing some defensive tackle in the old Whitlock role.
And Romeo Okwara has come in and played some defensive end. They moved OV inside, or they have Oladiguezue in there. He's been a mad scientist.
So let's really, really give a salute to Spagnuolo and his assistants for helping to identify how these guys can properly be used to maximize their efficiency. I don't want to let that go unnoticed.
Me neither. That's why I brought it up in the beginning, and I wanted to give a lot of credit to Steve Spagnuolo.
Good stuff.
He's done a fantastic job. And before I let you guys go, I just had a question. I'll take this off the air. You know, now that we're starting to get a little bit of a semblance of a running game, do you think we might see some play action coming sooner or later? I mean, we haven't done play action in forever, for God's sake.
Well, you know, you can do play action out of the shotgun. To me, it's not the same. I like play action from under center. And they're just not under center a ton. I hope you'll see a little bit more of it because I think when Eli Manning was playing his best football, Paul, he was so good at the play action pass.
He was great at it.
So, Steve, from your lips to Ben McAdoo and Mike Sullivan's ears, I think we might see more of that towards the end of the year, all right?
Thanks
for the call,
pal.
Appreciate it. We have some open lines at 201-939-4513. Big Ed in Maryland's up next in the meantime. Big Ed, what's going on? How are you, buddy?
What's up, Big John?
How are you?
What's up, Big Paulie D in the place to be?
How you doing,
man? How y'all doing, man?
Great to talk to you. You too. You
too. Big Ed, I got a question for you. You're Big Ed. What does Big Ed put down on Thanksgiving? How much did you eat yesterday, Big Ed?
How much did I eat yesterday, man? I really didn't eat much. I really worked.
Oh, okay.
Nothing wrong with that.
I really worked, man. And that was the fun part for me, because
nice.
I worked.
That's all right, because that means you're working to put food on the table tomorrow.
And I'm thankful for that, you know. And then I want to tell y'all another thing what I'm thankful for. I'm thankful for y'all, man. I'm so thankful for having this opportunity of life to be cherished by the great gentleman that you be, continue to be, especially you, Paulie D. Man, you're such an inspiration, man.
Well, you're very kind, man. You're very kind.
Inspiration.
Meet me, Paulie D.
We love what we do.
Yes, we do.
Not hard to find.
Hey, by the way, and Big Ed, Matthew, you brought it up, we are very thankful for all the loyal fans and listeners out there that make it possible for us to not just do this show, but all the content we do on Giants Radio, Giants Radio Network, Giants.com, Giants TV. Without you guys, we wouldn't have jobs. So
what would the NFL
you.
Be without fans?
Exactly.
You know?
Right. Yep. Fresh. Now, I'll tell you this. I like what y'all said, but here's an extra thing to that linebacker thing. The linebacker thing is outstanding. The continuation of the switch-ups is great. But he was saying something about doing certain things, and it's like sack or which one you want, sack or interception, depending on the time of the game. Now, early in the game, I want a sack. But late in the game, I want an interception.
Big Ed, Big Ed, no, Big Ed, Big Ed. There's nothing bad about a takeaway. You'll take away any time you can get one. Trust me.
You always take the interception, Big Ed.
Right.
Trust me.
Always.
Yeah, of course.
Always.
Absolutely. Man, did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Fantastic. It's wonderful.
Great. I'm so happy.
Can't you tell I'm in a good mood? I'm usually really cranky. I mean, I'm flying today.
Yeah. I know. It's real quiet here. You know why. Oh, my gosh. When the Redskins lose in D.C., man, it's quiet.
Hey, man.
Yeah, church bells running.
Hey, you know, Big Ed, you say that. It's funny. You know what, though?
Dallas,
I watched that game.
It's almost like that for 2 weeks.
The Redskins are a good football team. They might have a top five offense in the league, and I said this earlier in the week, and I'm curious to see if Paul's going to scoff at me. To me, and there's not even a question in my mind anymore. Kirk Cousins, top 10 quarterback.
Yeah,
right.
I think you gotta start tipping your cap to him at this point, because
how many more times does he have to do it?
By this point, it's not a fluke now.
No,
now it looks like he really is something, and he's hearing the change in the register.
Oh,
big time!
Oh yeah,
he bet on himself like Flacco did, and he's going to cash in
and
like
by
Flacco
the way,
did.
I will take Kirk Cousins right now over Joe Flacco any day of the week.
Well,
that's me personally.
He's got some more talent around him too. Better offensive line, too.
And better receivers. That absolutely is true. I can't argue that. That's fair. All right, Big Ed, thanks for the call, pal. We appreciate it.
I think we lost him.
I think his cell phone was going off.
Oh, okay.
That was that. Either that or he was being abducted by aliens. One or the other.
Oh,
I'm not sure
no!
which one.
Tweet us, Big Ed. We want to know that you're okay.
Let's go to Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, how are you, buddy? Hold on a second. I forgot to play it. There it is.
Oh, that's all right.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Hallelujah.
Losing his mind.
Mr. Illness.
He wasn't right in the hat.
Enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
And here we go.
Now, Charlie in Portland, Maine. What's up, buddy? How are you? Happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hey, where has Mr. Illness been?
Hey, Mr.
That's
Illness got a sack. He got a sack 2 weeks ago for you, Charlie. He got that sack. I heard him yell from the press box. This one's for you, Charlie.
That's the only sack he's played, I think. But it was good. He got a sack.
It was a squashing sack, too.
Yeah, he mushed him. All right, he mushed him.
Hey, I hope we don't have a brownout on Sunday. That would be a little
bad,
like you guys did on your phones a couple of days ago.
Wow. Yeah, that was quite a day. Charlie, I will tell you this now. You know, I want you to enjoy your leftovers. and I want you to make sure you save enough room for your dessert. And then on Sunday morning, I want you to clear off the table and relax and just, like, have a nice cup of coffee and watch the game peacefully.
I don't want to give Charlie any more caffeine.
No, all right, decaf.
Okay, thank you.
But peacefully.
No, Italian roast. Peacefully
enjoy the game on Sunday. Don't get upset. Don't throw stuff around.
Like you?
Enjoy the game. It's going to be okay. I promise you, it's going to be okay.
And Paul, please tell me what is the attributes of Shepherd as one of our linebackers, because he's rated like one of the worst linebackers by Pro Football Focus in the league.
Don't ever use that phrase to me, because I have many issues with those people.
Okay.
I like the fact that they watch and that they keep stats and they keep numbers, but I do not subscribe to their philosophies or their grades.
Well, and I can give you an example, Charlie.
Please do.
We actually,
please tell them.
We actually have.
Please tell them.
And look, and I always say the same thing when we have our guys on for Pro Football Focus. I think they're a good tool in the shed. You see stuff that they put out there and stuff that they do. Then you go back there and you compare it to what you've seen. You compare it to numbers, and you talk to people around the team. Just for an example, I was talking to Steve Spagnuolo last week. All right?
Yes.
And you mentioned Kelvin Shepherd. And Kelvin Shepherd was rated as one of their worst performers at linebacker in the game against
Keenan Robinson last week, too, was another one.
Yes, in the game against the Bears, both of them. And I asked Steve Spagnuolo, Spags, how'd those guys do in the game? And he said, they graded pretty well for us. And I go, really? He goes, yeah. And then I said, what Pro Football Focus at? And he goes, they were put in positions they shouldn't have been put into because of other players on the defense making mistakes. So, again, this is not Pro Football Focus's fault. They're seeing what they're seeing. They're seeing, say, Keenan Robinson getting beat down the seam for a catch by Zach Miller. But the reality is, because of another player's mistake, he should never have been in the position to be guarding Zach Miller on the play to begin with, and he was covering for somebody else's mistake. So that's why when you get some of these things, you have to go back and double-check and figure things out. Now, over the course of the season, do these mistakes probably even out to a large extent and their ratings are probably okay? Yeah.
Who knows?
Sure, they might be. But I do think in some respects, without knowing the scheme, you do have to be a little bit, let's double-check and make sure if this is similar to what the coaches have.
And you see, Charlie, to be perfectly frank with you, that's why, I've not put a lot of stock in the gradings or the analysis. Again, I'll take some of the facts. The facts, they're really sharp on. But here's the thing. I have opportunities like Bob Papa does, like John does, like any of our regulars who are here. We can go to the coaches, we can go to the players, and we can discuss with them things that we've seen, mistakes that were made, plays that were called, and we can fix them and rectify them on our charts. Pro Football Focus can't do that. They're not talking to Spags. They're not talking to Kelvin Shepherd. They're not talking to Olivier Vernon on a particular play and say, what happened on that play? They'll never know. They will never know. So not only is their stuff then going to have margin of error, but it will be compounded because they can't fix it. So please, don't ever, any caller out there, don't ever say to me, Pro Football Focus graded a player, and because Pro Football Focus said this guy was good or bad, don't ever say that to me.
Well, no, you can
because
say,
it's not going to work.
They can say it to you, and then you can give your opinion on whether or not you agree.
You want to quote their numbers, I'll work with you. But don't quote their analysis. Just don't.
But do you think Spags is going to actually throw his guys under the bus and say, no, they actually played terrible?
Charlie, there is a respect. There is a mutual respect given to us in this building by the coaches and by the players who will honestly discuss because we want to get it right. We're in the business, at least as far as I know, John, we're in the business of getting it right. I know I don't like to be wrong, and I will get it right. Even if it has to be something that's corrected, I will get it right. And so
I agree with that.
That's
it. I agree with that.
And I'll tell you if it's a screw-up.
Hey, I want to say one other thing. We actually saw number 65. Number 65, Will Beatty, actually played a bunch of snaps. I don't know how many, maybe 3, 4, 5. I didn't get the number yet.
I'll give it to you.
So,
Charlie, you want to laugh, though? You know when you know the on the punt when the Giants had to call timeout in the game last week? Do you know why they had to call timeout on that punt?
No.
Because Will Beattie was supposed to be in the game blocking at the edge of the line. He was nowhere to be found. And they had to call timeout because they had 10 guys on the field.
I can't believe you did that. I can't believe you just ruined this day.
I had to. It's a fact.
It is a fact.
It was because he probably didn't realize he was actually going to play. They probably probably was back in the bench going, I'm never going to play. So we're so glad to see him out there, and he played pretty well. Didn't he play the jumble tight end, or did he take Hart's
place? Hold on. I'm looking for his snaps. He had 2 snaps on offense and 4 snaps on special teams.
There you go.
So how did you grade those 6 snaps, Charlie? A plus?
Oh, he was the highest grade of pro football. He got the highest grade. I want to see him again this week.
All right, Charlie, before we let you go, give me the Charlie in Portland, Maine Thanksgiving. Like, do you go out and, like, hunt your own wild turkey and then, like, pluck it and cook it? What do you do?
What do I do? Well, it's a little Italian version of Thanksgiving. But what I do is this Italian egg stuffing, but I put lobster in it. So it's a lobster stuffing Italian egg stuffing.
Holy smokes.
Maine lobster in the stuffing. That sounds pretty good.
So, yeah, it was. It was good. It's always good. So, hey, guys, look forward to the win. And all the other thing I want to say is, look, Dallas' defense is suspect.
Yep.
If we jump on them early, we take them out of their running game, and we just have to hit them early, score early, and Dallas can be beaten. And other teams can beat them that way, too, because their defense, as you saw, is not very good. I mean, Washington should have scored about 6 more times, and they couldn't do it. They would have won that game going away because all they have is their offense, and they have their running game. But you get ahead of them, they're not going to be able to run. They're going to have to pass. It's a whole different game then.
Thanks, Charlie.
So, okay, guys.
Appreciate it. And I think you made a good point in the Cowboys' defense because the reason they won that game were those 2 red zone stops, and then obviously the Redskins missed a field goal. Their pass rush isn't very good. For one, they don't get to the quarterback well. Kirk Cousins wasn't sacked once in 51 pass attempts. I mean, that's obviously a big-time problem. But they're also banged up in the secondary right now. Barry Church is out, and Morris Claiborne is out. So that obviously hurts their defense as well.
I thought I heard him say right before the Cowboys comment, looking forward to the win. So Charlie actually believes that the Giants will win this game, and he will not have to go through any drama.
He's feeling good about it.
He's always the doomsayer on this show.
I know. By the way, the caller before, and I forgot to bring it up a little bit earlier. Hopefully he's still listening. And this is some of the stuff where I think Pro Football Focus is great.
Yes.
So they have time to throw for the quarterbacks up there.
They can keep stats and facts fine. So I'm good with that.
The guy with the most time to throw in the league is Tyrod Taylor. With 3.35 seconds, that's till time till either he throws it or gets sacked, basically till the play is over.
Okay.
Aaron Rodgers, 2.97 seconds. Third, believe it or not, is Andrew Luck. And everyone kills his offensive line. Well, maybe it's because Andrew Luck holds the ball a little bit too much. So that, I thought, is interesting. And then fourth is Dak Prescott at 2.89 seconds. Eli is 24th, so he gets rid of the ball fifth quickest in the league at 2.39 seconds.
Now, this is terms of average seconds to releasing the ball. This is not how much time he's got to be protected.
Well, there's no way to judge that.
Right. And that's what makes – now, again, you must take everything in context. Those are great numbers. But, like in the Giants case, we know for a fact that Eli's got – a huge portion of his playbook, which is designed to get rid of the ball in under 2.5. So that number should be really low.
Yeah, because he gets rid of the ball quick.
Because that's the plan. That's the game plan. So in a way, all this does, is this chart will tell you, is, okay, that's probably the way that these certain teams are designed to run their offenses, and that's when they want their quarterback to get rid of the ball. This does not necessarily indicate anything in terms of how effective the offensive line has been in holding guys out. It doesn't. It just doesn't. Well, you got to take it out. It's taken out of context.
Would you like time until sacked? Would that help you? How quickly?
Not necessarily, because some guys buy more time in the pocket before they get sacked.
That's fine, too. That's why you have to watch it.
It's always got it. And again, I appreciate the hard work and the hours these guys put in because I know what it's like. I do similar stuff on my own. But you must take it in its proper context. You can never take it out of the context and just say, here's the number, this is what it means, because it doesn't.
Right. 201-939-4513. Bruce is in New York. He's up next. What's up, Bruce?
Hi, guys. Love the show.
Hi, Bruce.
I got a hypothetical because I know how much you love hypotheticals.
No problem. What's up?
Okay. Now, is it possible that Justin Pugh could be the best tackle on this team?
He's really he's a good tackle. He is good.
He's bigger, he's quicker, he's stronger, he's smarter than he was as a rookie when he did play tackle.
He played tackle his first 2 years, so he was there as a sophomore too. But I will say this, Bruce, I believe Justin Pugh is a better guard than he is a tackle.
I said that since the day he was drafted.
Part two.
Okay, part two.
Eric Flowers be the best guard on this team because I see him throw people around. The only fault with him that I see is that he gets beat in space, but when you get him one-on-one, he just crushes people. You know, I'm just thinking how they don't get movement on the line. If he was a guard and Pugh was a tackle, I think they might be better off, but I'm not sure.
It's an interesting question, and here's the only thing about Flowers being a guard, and I'll love to get Paul's take on this too, is body type. And he's so big. I mean, he's 6'7". I mean, if he's standing there at guard in front of Eli Manning trying to throw passes standing up at 6'7", I think that might affect Eli Manning's passing lanes, to be quite honest with you.
He will also have leverage problems.
Yes, guys will get underneath him and push him back.
And there are bigger, stronger defensive tackles who are going to get in his chest.
Good point.
And give him a big, big problem. And you'll like your guards to pull out a lot. You'll pull out your guards more than you will your tackles.
They'll put him on the move.
And Eric Flowers does not have that kind of mobility.
That's a good point.
Okay, great answer.
Thank you, Bruce.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate the call.
I'm really glad, by the way, that Justin Pugh has developed into a top-flight guard. I had always thought that he would be a better guard, much like, I always thought the same for Bobby Hart. I still think Bobby Hart's going to be a better guard long-term than a tackle.
Yeah.
But he's proven now that he's absolutely able to hold up a tackle.
So then you would agree with Pro Football Focus's analysis that Justin Pugh is one of the best guards in the National Football League.
It's hard not to agree with that. I think with Justin, let me see what I got him down for on my chart as far as sacks are concerned. And again, sacks, hurries, they're all cumulative.
Yep.
I don't have Justin Pugh giving up a sack this season. Okay? And I think he's only been called for one, maybe two penalties. Now, any offensive lineman, again, take it in context. I'm not going to accuse Pro Football Focus of taking stuff out of context and then make the same mistake myself. But what I will say is, taken in context, not allowing a sack and I think only having two penalties.
Right now, they have Pugh down for, I can tell you what they have.
Yeah.
They have zero sacks allowed.
Okay, that agrees with me.
Two quarterback hits allowed.
I do not have that
and
number.
And then seven hurries allowed, which is phenomenal for as many
Again,
games
that's subjective, but I'll take their word for it.
Yep.
That's a pretty darn good number. And how do they have penalties? I think he's got two penalties, if I'm not mistaken. No more than two.
But I can check that, I think, on the other page here. Hold on.
It's no more than two.
Number of penalties for Pugh, two.
Okay.
They have two down for him.
So it's very hard to argue against him being a top-flight guard.
Yeah.
And this is why, for the last 2 years, John, we've heard people say, well, we should just left Pugh at right tackle. Or we should have put Flowers at right tackle and put Pugh at left tackle. No. This guy could be an elite guard. That's where he belongs.
Got an interesting tweet, and I know we brought this up on the PapaCast, and you can check out the PapaCast Giants cast via WFAN. It'll be up later on today. We have a nice little round table, me, Paul, and Mr. Bob Papa talking New York Giants football. A little cross-promotion. This tweet from Rod Chipepo at Chipepo. It's funny, Dallas has two back-to-back Thursday night games, which means they will have 10 days of rest before coming to MetLife. Very true, and not just that, by the way. Guess what team is 10 days rest before they play the Giants next Sunday?
Go right ahead.
The Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
So that's two straight games against likely playoff teams that will, Dallas might have already clinched a playoff spot, to be honest with them. I got to check that. I'm not even sure. But in Pittsburgh, I still has a good chance to win the NFC North. Two good AFC. Football teams. AFC North, sorry. two good football teams will have 10 days of rest before they play. The Giants and the Steelers are at home. That's rough.
Yeah. Let's just hope the Giants come through Cleveland's game clean.
And you know what? It's funny you mentioned that. I think it's great that you did. Obviously, you have to go in there and you got to get the win. And I don't like the fact that we didn't get any calls from fans about the Browns, and that doesn't reflect that people are looking past them, which obviously you don't want to do. But
it's still a game.
Very important to get through this game healthy. Very important. Because right now, as I think it was Stephen West Point brought up earlier, the Giants have been pretty healthy this year. They've lost some players here or there. Every NFL team does. But for the most part, they've been fairly healthy. You got to keep that going down the stretch with five really tough games coming your way in December and January.
I'll make 2 points to piggyback off of that. Remember what John said a little while ago on the show when the secondary was decimated by injuries? The Giants lost 3 games in a row. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's not forget that. So that's a big deal. Now think about this offensive line. Okay, Justin Pugh was out there the other day moving around, is what Coach said.
And then
moving around, and then yesterday did not work at all.
Yeah, which means no this week, and now Pittsburgh are even like, ugh.
Probably not too good.
Yeah.
Okay, because you figure logic tells you he's going to have to practice for a week before they put him in a game.
Coming off a sprained knee, probably right.
Okay, so that's not really great news. Marshall Newhouse, still dealing with the calf.
Knee.
No, I'm sorry, the knee. Correct.
Which is funny because the way he ran up and down the sideline and off and back on the field in that game, I thought he was going to be okay this week.
I know. But right now, he's dealing with the knee. It's Geddes who's got the calf. Right. And at the moment.
And Brett Jones has the calf, too.
Brett Jones has the calf. At the moment, Geddes is the healthiest of the Giants' left guards. So they have now gone through 4 left guards in 2 weeks. Okay? They do not, I repeat, do not need any injury setbacks on this offensive line in Cleveland. They are absolutely stripped to the bone. Offensive line has to get through this game healthy. And then perhaps reinforcements as the health improves the following week. But those two spots, really critical for the Giants to be able to come out of this without any issues.
Absolutely. And let's real briefly, we got 5 minutes to go in the show, Paul. Let's talk about the Browns a little bit before we say goodbye.
That's
we really
fine.
Haven't done that yet. Offensively first, I think it's probably a bad thing that we're getting Josh McCown instead of Cody Kessler because I think McCown's probably a better quarterback at this point. He's made some plays in the past. He's had some big games. But we talked to my buddy Aaron Goldhammer, who covers the Browns earlier in the week. He thinks McCown's shoulder's still banged up, and he's playing through an injury. Thinks it's going to be his last year, and he's trying to give him everything he's got left.
Wow.
So that's one thing to keep an eye on. He doesn't think he's throwing the ball the same way he has in the past because of the shoulder injury. So that's one thing to keep an eye on. Number two, they have two talented but inexperienced wide receivers in Terrell Pryor, who has shown a lot this year, but again, not a lot of experience at the position, and Corey Coleman, who's still trying to come back from a broken hand, which for a wide receiver, as you might imagine, tough to come back from, and he doesn't have a lot of experience. He's played in, 5 NFL games or so, and he was raw coming out of a spread offense in college. So they have some talent outside. They have a veteran quarterback, but their offensive line is a mess. Besides Joe Thomas, it's a sieve. I mean, people are running up and down and through that line all game long, and that's really what's killed them. The quarterbacks have been in and out of the lineup because they keep getting hit because the offensive line can't block anybody.
Well, I think when Joe Thomas says the other day that the Browns front office has done a horrible job in getting us a center.
I think they reap what they sow is the expression that he used. Because they lost Alex Mack to the Falcons last year.
Correct. And you know, when your staple, your future Hall of Fame left tackle, comes out and says something like that about one of his line mates, not just a teammate, but one of his line mates, when the offensive line is usually the closest group in the locker room, it's not good. It's just not good. So that tells you a lot about, you know, where the Browns stand. Now, I will tell you, I don't think their offensive line is as necessarily as horrible as some people would think, because I think their quarterback play is dreadful, and I don't think their running back play is very good. So considering all of that, I think their offensive line is kind of a mixed bag. You've got the great Joe Thomas, and then you've got apparently, Cameron Irving is going to start this week, according to their depth chart.
And, boy, he was a, what, late first round pick, early second round pick out of Florida State.
He was high. He was high, but in a weak center class though that year.
And remember, he played tackle at Florida State, if I remember, and he was going to transition.
He was projected to center the whole time.
Correct, absolutely.
And you know, so it's kind of like their line is a mixed bag. And if you believe in the Parcells axiom that you're only as good as your weakest link, well, then the Browns line is bad. Because they've got like two weak links on this line, in any event. That's their offense. Barnridge is a good tight end.
Barnridge is a good player.
Let's not kid ourselves. He's a good tight end. And then on defense, we all know about Hayden. Collins is a bit of an undisciplined kind of linebacker. I mean, that's why he's not with the Patriots anymore. Also, he wanted elite money, and he's not an elite player. He's a good player, but he does get sloppy. Okay.
He freelances.
Yes. So. That's an issue. And then on the line, you mentioned Ogba.
By the way, did you know Bill Belichick doesn't like players that freelance and doesn't follow his game plan? Did you know that?
Well, he liked LT.
Well, if you're LT, you can do whatever you want.
Yes,
okay?
Yes,
Jamie
yes.
Collins, good?
Not working. Not working. And Ogba, who, you know, I'm going to tell you something about him. And I'm going to end my comments with this. Ogba is maybe a good prospect, but right now I look at him, John, and I've already watched the cut-ups. He does not have power that he needs to have to play the position.
No, all he is a speed rusher on the edge. That's all he is.
And you can lock him down. He does not have a second move. Mm-hmm. He does not get good push. They've been flopping him from side to side. He's their most dangerous pass rusher, and he's not that dangerous.
And remember, he was one of those tweener hybrid guys you love so much coming out of college.
Yeah. He says that. I hope he's saying that sarcastically.
Yes.
The tweeners that I love so much.
Danny Shelton's good.
I got no problems with Shelton. Shelton is good.
Joe Hayden's good.
You don't want to run up the middle against Shelton. He'll gobble you up.
He's a big boy.
He's solid in there, but we knew that coming out.
And Joe Hayden's good.
Joe Hayden's a good player. So they've got some good players. They just don't have a good team.
And you know what, though? And to be fair, and I know this is a tough thing to say, and I have a couple messages out to Pro Football Focus on the numbers rushing out of the under center.
Okay,
jumbo
why don't
thing.
You do get that?
Well, I don't have it yet.
Oh, okay.
He said he's looking for him. I probably won't get him before the end of the show. If
okay.
I get him, I'll
you
put him out there on
minutes.
Twitter for
yep.
you. Exactly.
Okay.
But if you had to pick out one thing, and this is the final question I'll ask you, if there's one thing that can sink the Giants this weekend and give the Browns their first win, what is it? Or a couple things that have to happen for the Giants to lose.
Two things. If the Browns get takeaway ratio, turnover ratio. I mean, if Eli and the Giants wind up turning the ball over three or four times, they fumble a punt, they fumble a kickoff, a couple of batted balls get picked off, somebody fumbles the ball out of a run. All of a sudden now, if the Browns get four takeaways.
I don't even think plus one's good enough for Cleveland.
No.
If they get into plus two territory, you get into danger zone.
I'm talking about a bunch. Plus three territory even. Okay, that's the first thing that could hurt the Giants, because you don't want to give the Browns extra opportunities or a short field, because that will enhance their belief and their competitiveness to think that they can win the game. The other thing that I would believe, quite frankly, you don't need one of those, when we've seen them before on occasion, one of those 11 penalty games. You don't need a double-digit penalty game all of a sudden to bite you in the rear end, and that you're constantly in 3rd and 16, even though the Browns aren't a very good defense, you don't want to put yourself in those spots. And you don't want to tilt the field in their behalf by penalizing yourself throughout the afternoon.
And then special teams return touchdowns, too. That's always something you can throw in there that could be
Well, that's
random.
Always a wild card. But that's, that. You know, honestly, X's and O's wise, you don't have to be a genius to figure out which team should win this game. That's why they got to play it, though. That's why they got to play it.
Everybody, thank you for joining us and spending part of your holiday weekend with us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. I'll get that information from Pro Football Focus. I'll try to get it out there on Twitter, or I'll wait till next week. I'll give it to you next week. I know Paul's been kind of harping on that. I'm sure you'd like those numbers to use during the pregame show on Sunday.
I would be very interested to see what they are. It doesn't mean the Giants are suddenly going to run all under center on Sunday.
No, I'm just curious. I'm curious. I think it's interesting.
I wouldn't mind seeing it.
But thank you for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your holiday weekend. We'll be back on Monday with more Big Blue Kickoff Live. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you then. Giants and Browns on Sunday. If you like this show, tune in to WFAN at 11:30, and we'll have more of it for you on WFAN. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmuck. We'll see you next time, everybody. Have a great weekend. Enjoy.